reading through John chapter 4, verses 5 through 30. It's a long passage. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to read it real quickly, but I'm going to read it really quickly because I read really fast, tend to be. So I'll just try to read it, and after we read it, we'll jump right into the sermon, okay? So John chapter 4, it says in verse 5, starting in verse 5, and so he came to a town, Jesus, of Samaria called Sychar, near the field that Jacob had given to his son Joseph. And Jacob's well was there. And so Jesus, wearied as he was from his journey, was sitting beside the well. It was about the sixth hour, which is about 12 noon. Now there came a woman of Samaria to draw water. And Jesus said to her, "Give me a drink." For his disciples had gone away into the city to buy food. And the Samaritan woman said to him, "How is it that you, a Jew, ask for a drink from me, a woman of Samaria? For the Jews have no dealings with Samaritans." Now Jesus answered her, "If you knew the gift of God and who it is that is saying this to you, 'Give me a drink,' you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water." And the woman said to him, "Sir, you have nothing to draw water with, and the well is deep. Where do you get that living water? Are you greater than our father Jacob? He gave us this well and drank from it himself, as did his sons and his livestock." And Jesus said to her, "Everyone who drinks of the water of this water will be thirsty again. But whoever drinks of the water that I will give him will never be thirsty forever. The water that I will give him will become in him a spring of water welling up to eternal life." Now the woman said to him then, "Sir, give me this water so that I will not be thirsty or have to come here to draw water." And then Jesus said to her, "So go call your husband and come here." And the woman said to him, "I have no husband." And Jesus said to her, "You are right in saying, 'I have no husband,' for you have had five husbands, and the one you now have is not your husband. What you have said is true." And the woman said to him, "Sir, I perceive that you are a prophet. And you know, our fathers worshipped on this mountain, but you say that in Jerusalem is the place where people ought to worship." And Jesus said to her, "Woman, believe me, the hour is coming when neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem will you worship the Father. You worship what you do not know. We worship what we know, for salvation is from the Jews. But the hour is coming, and is now here, when the true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and truth, for the Father is seeking such people to worship him. God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship in spirit and truth." And the woman said to him, "I know that Messiah is coming, he who is called Christ. And when he comes, he's going to tell us all these things." And Jesus said to her, "I who speak to you am he." And just then, his disciples came back, and they marveled that he was talking with a woman. But no one said, "Why? What do you seek? Or why are you talking with her?" And so the woman left her water jar and went away into town and said to the people, "Come, see a man who told me all that I ever did. Can this be the Christ?" And they went out of the town and were coming to him. This is the word of the Lord. So today we're looking at a passage that's very cool. Who's heard the story before? Is everybody? A lot of people read the story, right? And I've read the story multiple times too. And it's one of those stories that I constantly come back to because it's one of my favorite moments where Jesus meets someone that's very different from him. And I think when you read John, the Gospel of John especially, I always ask people in our Bible studies, what is John about? What is this whole purpose of John? What is the goal of the author of John when he writes it? And when you read John in chapter 20, what it says in the words, John even puts these, he basically tells you what he's writing about. He says, in John chapter 20, verses 30 to 31, you can write it down if you want, that these things are written so that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name. And what he's saying is, my goal is for you to know who Jesus really is. Not only to know Jesus, but that it would change you and you would have life in his name. Okay? And so everything John writes is for the goal of presenting to you the story of Jesus, to know Jesus personally. And so we were studying John, and we were reading over this passage, and I was driving one of the students home. David was there, and we were studying. I was talking to the teacher of the group, which is Shen, and we were talking, and then all of a sudden it hit. We were talking about this passage, and I guess the sermon came together in that moment in the conversation. And so the question I want to ask is, what happens when you encounter Jesus? What happens when you meet Jesus for the first time, or when you truly meet Jesus and he speaks to you? What happens? And the reason I say that is because I think there's a lot of people here, may not know me, maybe first time, some of you. And for others, you've been coming, and I know that you're seeking after something. And I know that perhaps in the sermons we've shared before, it doesn't always seem to challenge you or call you into a personal faith with Jesus. And I think every time you've come, it's not been a coincidence. It's not a circumstantial thing. That you are here because somehow, some way, God has brought you here at this moment. Out of all the cities you could be at, you are placed and called to come this morning. Today's the 13th of August, 2017, at 10:10. You have been called and even brought to be here. And at that moment, you're here. You're presented with a story where at this right moment, Jesus has to be in Samaria, in this specific city. And this girl, I'm sure this woman, when she got up in the morning, she wasn't like, oh, I'm going to get up today and meet the Messiah. She wasn't like, oh, yeah, I'm going to meet the Messiah today, so it's going to be a great day. No, she shows up at noon, at 6, this is a 6 hour at noon, just to get water at the well. She's by herself, and in that moment, she encounters someone that changes her life. And so what happens when you encounter Jesus and you hear that story? What does the challenge to you, what are you called to, how are you called to respond? And so today, that's the goal, is to share that. Like, what happens when you meet Jesus at the well, when you meet Jesus today? And there's three things that happens, three things to think about. First of all, we have a daily struggle that Jesus talks about. We have a constant daily struggle. Second thing is we have a deeper pain that we encounter in our own lives. Perhaps we hid in it. And lastly, that there is a response that God gives that's satisfying. There's a satisfying response to those questions. And so our daily struggle. I want you to notice that today in this passage, when Jesus first encounters this woman, there is a lot of stuff that we don't understand. We read this or go, oh, what's the problem? Jesus meeting a woman at a well, it's chill, whatever. But in this story, there's a lot of parentheses, and there's a lot of like parentheses telling you there's something that's not right here. That when someone like him meets someone like her, they're breaking a lot of social, cultural norms and values, okay? Because the people of Jewish descent and Samaritans, they have a cultural difference. They have a constant struggle based on differences of values, of history, of their cultures having been separated. And there's a lot of racism involved in this matter, okay? And also, not only that, there's an issue with gender, because it's a man speaking to a woman, which is kind of not appropriate in that time, in that culture, okay? And lastly, there's an element where he's this famous or up-and-coming rabbi teacher, and he's talking to this woman who later we find out is kind of, I would say in this story, she's shady. She has a shady past. And so it's this person from two different socioeconomic backgrounds encounter each other for the first time. And I think there's something incredibly weird about this conversation that comes out of nowhere for this woman. And what he says basically is, hey, you know, give me a drink. Give me a drink. It's like almost like an initiatory thing. He says, I mean, he starts a conversation with the woman at the well. Give me a drink. So the woman says, okay. You know, he says, why would you talk to me? You're such a different person. This is not probably the best kind of conversation to start. And then Jesus, she's questioning him. And the first response Jesus says is, if you knew the gift of God and who it's saying it to you, give me a drink, you would have asked him and he would have given you living water. And what he actually says here is, hey, you know, the reality is if you knew who I really was, you would realize you're the one that's actually thirsty. It's like, then why'd you ask for a drink, dude? You know, in my mind, I'm thinking it's kind of funny. But what Jesus says here in that sentence, he's saying is that there is something that you actually crave for right now. This lady, he doesn't even know her. He says, you need something that everything in your life that you've done, everything in this space and this part of your life has never been able to satisfy. Everything you put your effort into, everything you've tried to do, your deepest desires, whatever it is, it has not worked, right? And I think this is kind of relevant to all of us today in the sense that how about our lives when we encounter things? We are on a daily pursuit after many different things, right? And whether it's pursuing a career, pursuing an education, pursuing a relationship, pursuing financial stability, pursuing having a, you know, just anything we're pursuing, there's always this deep desire to continue to ask for things, to want things. In many ways, it's kind of like a thirst, okay? And I think that's what Jesus is pointing to, is that we all have a desire, a craving to satisfy a thirst, a need. And so whether that's the new job we get or the new loves or the new careers, there's always things that we're pursuing after to satisfy that. But what we have found over life, if you're older, you know this, is that you pursue these things, you pursue these desires, and even though you might accomplish it, you might get it, it might satisfy for a brief moment. But like water, you need to drink it again, right? Water needs to be drunk again. You don't just drink one cup and then you're like, I'm good for the rest of my life. No more water necessary today, right? It quenches your thirst briefly, but not permanently. And I think what happens in our culture, I think today, is that we constantly are introduced to new desires, new thirsts. So you get satisfied with water for one moment, and then you're like, oh, I got a new job. It's great. And all of a sudden, you're like working at this job for a few years. You're going, man, you know, there's probably a better job for me out there. And you know what? I want to go work there. Or maybe there's a new toy. Like, you know, like you, when I was younger, and I, because it sounds really lame and super, you know, like, you like toys. I don't know if you guys like toys. I'm a sucker for toys, right? When I was younger. And like you get like a new, like a media, like a new, like the new iPhone, for example. You got the new iPhone. You're like, oh, man, I got the new iPhone. And it's like you're having fun with it, right? And after a season, you're like, man, this thing is kind of slow. It's kind of lame. After, and you see someone else has the newest version of it, and you're like, dude, I want that one. And it's almost like society or culture kind of exacerbates our need for wanting more things. We're never really satisfied by what we have, right? And especially because it goes outdated, it gets slower, we want more. So is there always an incompleteness with regards to smartphones and devices? But that kind of ties into a lot of different things. Hopefully you don't treat your girlfriend or boyfriend like that, where you're like, oh man, I'm with this guy, but hey man, there's someone better out there. But there is a sense that there is always this dissatisfaction, even when you're in a relationship with someone. And I think there's this constant need and thirst that happens in our life. And so the woman, she responds, she goes, what are you talking about this living water that I need? You know, what's better than this deep well that I have? And she goes, and she basically says, this deep well that I have that's been feeding us water since the founder started it. Jacob began this hundreds of years before. They've been using the exact same well. So this has obviously been good enough for us. And I think in many ways, when we are presented with that question, that you have a desire, a thirst, the first thing we say is, what's wrong with that? What's wrong with that? It's been good for me. Everything's been satisfying, right? And I think what Jesus says here is that then he says in response to that is, you know what? If you drink this water, you're never going to be satisfied fully. You'll always thirst again, right? But the water that I will give will never let you thirst again. And the water that I will give will become in you something that will produce even more life, a spring of water that wells into eternal life. And so what Jesus says here is, I offer something that will be so much more satisfying than all these pursuits and desires that you keep trying to satisfy and doesn't work. And I thought, what's a good illustration is, have you ever played like when you're like super on a hot day, you're running around and you're super tired? What do you want to drink? Do you want to drink Coke? I don't know. Some people do, I guess. But for me, I hate drinking Coke like right after like super thirsty or super hot. I don't know why, because whenever I drink Coke, it makes me more thirsty. Do you ever get that experience? Because I think the sugar, right? It's like it quenches you for a second, but it's dry on your lip and your tongue and you just hate it. That's for me personally. And I feel like that's kind of how the pursuit of desires in our lives turns out. And what Jesus says is, I have something that's greater. And this woman's response is very surprising. She says in verse 15, she says, sir, give me this water so that I will not be thirsty or have to come here to draw water. And I want to point out, this is very important. She says here, basically in two statements, I don't want to come back here. I don't like coming here. Tell me how I can have this so I never have to come back. And what she says, and I want you to point out, is she comes here by herself at 12 noon. And culturally, you have to think about it. We don't understand. We're like, what's the big deal going to a well at 12 noon? Well, first of all, these wells are probably far away. They're not always in the center of the city, right? This one's probably far away. And the thing about this well is when you don't go by yourself usually, because it's kind of dangerous. And not only that, why would you go at the hottest time of the day? We don't even go hiking at 12 noon. Well, some of us might, but it's not the wisest thing, right? You go usually early in the morning. And so the women in the culturally at that time would have usually gone to the well in the morning together as a group. So it's safety. Safety in numbers. You get your water. You carry the water back together as a group. Kind of like the first social hangout kind of thing. And that was the thing. But she is by herself. There's a reason for this. She's by herself. She's alone. And she doesn't have people. And maybe this is why she's driven to say, I don't want to come back here. Okay? And then this leads me to my next point, which is our deeper pain, is that Jesus then asks her, so, this is make this more appropriate. Let me call your husband. Let's go call your husband and come here. So you can talk to her, right? Just make it more appropriate. Because she's like, why are you talking to me? So he's like, okay, fine. Call your husband. We can talk, right? Her response is, I have no husband. And then Jesus says, you're right. You have no husband because you've had five husbands, and the one you're living with right now isn't even your husband, right? And so what you have said is true. So she wasn't lying, and what she reveals is her current status, is that she has had five husbands, and she's with another man right now. And everything she said is true. And I think this is basically follows verse 15 to reveal something. It says, you know what? Maybe she doesn't want to come back at 12. And why she's alone, right, is because this is perhaps is the reason why she is socially ostracized. Maybe she's an outcast in her community because of her lifestyle and her choices. It's led her to be isolated from her community and from her people. And so she kind of responds, says, hey, you must be a prophet. And then she starts to ask him, and she kind of switches to the different subject. Now, people argue, is this because she wanted to change the subject? She's uncomfortable? Or is it because maybe the subject was something she was thinking about? We don't know, right? The tone, I've seen both arguments. But I would say she switches to this question. She goes, you know what? I see that you're a prophet. So you're someone that can see these things. And you know, our fathers, our people, worshipped on this mountain. This is where we're called to worship God. But your people, the Jewish people, say that we are to worship in Jerusalem. And that's the place where we ought to worship. And what Jesus says to her is then his response. We have two different values. What she basically says is we have two different ways to worship. And I think her response is very realistic. She's saying, hey, you know what? Your values and my values are very different. Right? We want answers. I want to know. Why? Who? What's the right way to do this? Is this the right way? This way or this way? And I think what she's saying here is that, you know, this is something that we're very different in values here. And Jesus' response is really special because he basically says to her, "It says it's neither. It's neither this way or that way." Okay. He says this in verse 21. He says it's neither this mountain nor that mountain. You worship what you don't know. We worship what we know, for salvation is from the Jews. And he says, but the hour is coming and is now here when the true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and truth, for the Father is seeking such people to worship him. God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship in spirit and truth. And right here, what Jesus says is ultimately, worship, the way we worship and what we worship matters. And the truth is, when you worship, the way it comes about is that it's about Jesus. Ultimately, spirit and truth, what he's saying is, it's God having to move you, and there's an element that is not just God, but is also the foundation of a truth or text or scripture or reality of the gospel story that's concrete for you to tangibly understand. And what she says here is, and I think what is being expressed here is that this is what worship looks like. To truly understand worship, it's not about this location or that location. It's through me. Through Jesus. It's through spirit and truth. Okay, and that's why at the end he says, I am ultimately the person. But the reason I bring this up is because when you see this, I think when she changes the subject, you have to see what is the thing that she's been worshiping. What is the thing that has changed her life in a negative way, perhaps? And I think what you see in her life is that her life, her choices, have led her to have these multiple husbands, sexual partners. And not only that, that ultimately what Jesus is saying is your true need in worship isn't these things. It's not location-based. It's not about what you worship or what I worship. You need to worship in spirit and truth in Jesus. Your ultimate need is Jesus Christ. And I think there in this thing is that she, like everybody else, when we worship, the reason we worship is why. There is a desire to find completeness, find maybe an answer to something we don't understand, to be satisfied. And I think what you worship shapes that desire. Like, I think we all want answers and find reasons and purpose in life. We want to find completeness and satisfaction in whatever we do. We want to know that what we do is matters, right? And I think here, what Jesus says to this woman is, what you were looking for, where you want to worship, where your people worship, where our people worship, it's all wrong. It's none of these ways. It's always through spirit and truth. and it's ultimately through me. And the reason I bring this up, why I talk about worship, is because I think that is often how we pursue these longings, these desires. To satisfy these thirsts, these desires, we look for things to complete that desire, fully complete that desire, ultimately. And if you look at this text, right here in this passage, there's 10 times the word worship is used. 10 times the word is used, proskuneo or proskuneo. And this word proskuneo, what it means reverence. It means bowing down to something that's great, that you would subordinate yourself to, supplicate yourself to. You recognize when something is greater than you, and you honor it. That's what worship is. So you bow down like old time, the emperors, they bow down on their knees because it's basically worship because they're subjugating themselves to something, right, to an authority. And when you look at the word worship, where does it come from in Old English, the epistemology of it, it ties to these two things. It ties to the idea of worthiness, that when you look at an object, you look at its worthiness, its worth, and then you worship. That's where you get worship from, the idea of worth. And the reason I bring that up is that we are always worshiping something or someone. And what happens when we worship things is we ascribe value to them, or someone ascribes value to them for us, and we find appreciative. For example, I say what's a good illustration? This painting, you know, have you seen those shows where the antique, you go to the antique store and they're like, they buy a painting from a garage sale and they're like, oh, it's not a big deal. It's just this ugly painting of this dude like picking an apple tree or something, right? And you're like, great. And then like, you bring it to another place and the assessor says, this is a famous Monet painting. And you're like, what? It's worth millions of dollars. You're like, what? It could not be worth $1 million. I bought it for $2 at the garage sale, right? And they're like, it's a long lost painting from this famous artist that we thought was lost forever, and now it's worth $2 million. And see, in that moment, everything changes for you because the worthiness of that thing went from a $2 painting that you figured you just put in your bathroom for some reason, it becomes a painting that you can hang in an art gallery. Now you know this is worth millions. What would you do with it? How would you treat it? How would you value it? It's worth something greater, right? Its worthiness is there. And so for many people, we ascribe value to things, and that's why we worship them. And my point of saying that is it's when you understand a sense of its value, this is why you worship it. So for us, we worship something, but whatever we worship can be different. And my point of saying that is it's subjective a little bit too, right? If you, like for example, someone takes like a journal I have written in for years, it's worth a lot to me. It's probably just worth nothing, like 10 cents to another person. It's like toilet paper for someone else. But for me, that has been hours and months of my prayer and writing. It means much to me, right? And so whatever you ascribe value to, when you sense there's something valuable about it, it's the thing that you worship. What is that? And I think a lot of people don't realize they're worshiping all the time, but they're worshiping things. And I think a good example is when you see Lord of the Rings, when Gollum, of course, the cheesy one, he goes, my precious, right? He calls it my precious when he holds the ring. Why? You're like, it's just a ring. Most people see it, it's just a gold ring. What's the big deal? It's precious looking, but it's not that precious until you know its power, right? And whatever you find most precious, whatever you have that you cannot give up, whatever you cannot let go of, that is probably something you deeply worship. I'm going to be really honest. This is a very hard thing to say to a lot of people here, okay? And I think when you understand what you worship, the value of it, the proportion of that, richness of it, it makes you do anything for it. And I'll give you an example. When you read in Matthew chapter 13, in Matthew chapter 13, there's this parable given of the hidden treasure. It's in Matthew chapter 13, verses 44 to 46. It's two parables. It says the parable of the hidden treasure and the parable of the pearl of great value. It says the kingdom of heaven is like a treasure hidden in a field where a man found and covered up. And then in his joy, he goes and he sells all that he has and he buys that field. And again, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant in search of fine pearls who, on finding the one pearl of great value, went and sold all that he had and bought that because it was meant so much more to him. And the reason I share that is whatever you worship is so precious, you want to possess it, keep it. It's so important to you. And I think one of my favorite examples we preached through was Stephen's story in Acts when he was about to die. As he's about to die, his eyes are on God, and he worships God, and he trusts his life in God because he realizes in God, what he has here. He understands the value of that, the eternity with God, is greater than his fear of losing his life at this point. And I think that's what real worship looks like, is that we worship something. We all worship something. Okay, it could be your career, it could be your achievements. Whatever it is, okay. But, sorry, I'm like lost my train of thought. But whatever it is, its value is very temporary. And I think when you look at the story, when the Samaritan woman, what you see in here in the story too, is that in her response, there is a deep need she has. I think when you read her story about the men in her life, there's an element of companionship, this desire for fulfillment in relationship. Now, she's alone now. She has community. She has no community, no friends. She's an outsider, even in her own hometown or this town she's in. And so she doesn't want anymore to be like that. That's why she craves after what Jesus offers her. And I think we all worship something or someone in such a way, and it affects us. It could even cause us to not really have true fellowship with God. And that sometimes is our achievements, our family, bank accounts. And it makes us worry. It constantly stresses us out. But it's never enough. It's never enough. And I think when I was writing this, I think the thing I was really appreciative of it was the idea of worship, is that when you understand how precious something is, you would do anything for it. You would do anything for it. You would be willing to die for it, right? And I was like, what if God was that worthy to us, that he was so precious? And I think that's why worship leaders matter so much, because they guide us into the infinite value, richness of who God is. And that's why we worship him. We put him above anything in our lives. And I think whatever you cannot give up, cannot let go of, and is so precious that you don't want to let go of, that is what you really worship. And I know that a lot of you here are Christians. You're going, like, I have no problem giving everything to God. Really? Do you really? Or is there something that you cannot let go of? It could be a relationship you're in. It could be the financial security that you always covet. It could be maybe wanting to have a perfect family situation. These are things that are not in control, right? And you need to put God first. And I think in the story here, what you see is the woman, is she has put her value and her worship in something. It wasn't maybe the location, but it was in something that has not only brought her any peace, but brought her much pain. And I think that's been her deepest pain. And so when Jesus asks her these questions, you look at it. It's when I read this from before to now, I see Jesus constantly approaching her and entering into a space with her and saying, it's your deepest desire. It's not just a surface level thing where you're thirsty or not. There's something more deep that you're hurting in, that you have put important than me and God and worship. And because of that, it has destroyed your life and ruined you. And so that leads me to my last point. As Jesus gives a satisfying response. He says here, I am what you're ultimately looking for. Now, when you hear this first statement, you're kind of like, dude, that doesn't really give me much peace, right? But what I think Jesus says here is, I am that well. I am that satisfying thing that will quench your thirst. And this is something that my friend said to me. I don't know if it's correct, and I probably won't go that far to make this call, but I want to share with you, because I think it made me read this text very differently, is that when you read this text where it says all the worship stuff, when he says who you worship, Jesus here three times uses the word Father. Jesus three times used the Father, and it's like, Jesus, why do you use Father? And I was studying this text with a sister, a group of friends before, and one of my sisters pointed out, maybe there is something to do with her need for men. It has maybe something to tie to her pain, is this need for a male figure in her life. And Jesus, by using that word Father, was to remind her, he is the true Father. Now, I don't know if that's true. Okay, I don't want to jump too far to that side, because that might be a little bit more psychology than I'm comfortable with. But I think it's very interesting that he uses that word specifically rather than God or Lord. And my guess is that he's saying this. You want an intimate relationship. You desire a true intimate relationship. And what Jesus offers is the most personal, familial relationship with you. It's like your Father. It's a true Father, a true figure in your life that you can trust to have personal relationship with in a deeper, richer way. And I think that's more comforting for me to say that. So I'm going to go with that one. But I think we all desire something deeper and richer, and we're always worshiping a lot of different things. I don't know what you're worshiping, and some of you are new, so I don't even know it. But whatever that is, okay, might make you even undeserving, you feel, of his grace. Undeserving, and maybe even feeling, maybe, you know what, maybe it's my self-image. I'm not good enough. Maybe it's the sense that you've been impure in your life, and so you don't deserve to come before him. Maybe it's a shame in your life that you have never told anybody about. Perhaps it's really some sort of literal brokenness in your life that we don't know, right? Maybe it's a bad decision you've made personally. We all carry stuff like that. And imagine when Jesus comes to you at the well and he asks you the same questions. What is that thing that you thirst for? Actually, you're the one that thirsts. You're like, whoa, wait, really? And I'm like, and he goes deeper and he goes, what is it that you truly worship? You're worshiping in the wrong place. You put your worship in the wrong things. And what he says here is very personal. And he says basically, I am him. I am the answer. And I want you to understand why this is so important. Because when he uses the word about spring and well, he goes, he calls it a well. He says, you're getting from Jacob's well. And he says, here, but what I give you comes from, will create in you a spring of eternal life. What he's saying is a difference. You have to understand this. Living water for us today is like whatever. Like, turn on the faucet, we get living water, right? Healthy water, it's good, fresh, it's clean. But for them, water was life. It was something that would be the difference between life and death. And if you drank certain waters, it could kill you, right? And so water from a well or from a cistern is a water that's very passive. It's sitting, it collected from rainwater. It's a byproduct of just supply, right? But yet a spring is a source. It's constantly giving you fresh water. It's clean, it's pure, it's refreshing. And there's a difference there. And what Jesus says is you've been taking from a well. Yes, there's water, but it's always conducive or based on whether there's a lot or not enough, right? Depends on the rainwater. You're always defined by your circumstances. But this side, this spring, it gives you life. It gives you something that you'll never have to lack in any way. It will always satisfy. And I want you to understand how profound this changes for her. Because this woman who is shamed, the first thing she does, as she realizes the magnitude of what Jesus is saying to her, she drops in verse 28, she leaves her water jar. The very thing she came to do, she drops it there. And she runs back to her town, to the people that turn away from her, that reject her. And she says to them two things. She says, come, see a man who told me all that I ever did. And the second thing she says, can this be the Christ? You see, there's such a profound impact on her that she is not even afraid of her sin or shame. She says, hey, this guy knew my brokenness to the deepest core. He knew my sin. He called me out on my sin. You know what? Who could this be but someone that could save me? Salvation, grace. And the reason I share this story to you guys today is this. The reason we have the ability to come before God and have a relationship with him personally, okay, for some of you here, you come every week, okay, you come every week, you hear the sermons, and I talk about Jesus very passively, sometimes the gospel. I want to tell you, perhaps this is your well story, and perhaps you're being challenged by God to say, what is your deepest desire? What is your deepest thirst in? And is the things that you've been filling it truly satisfying you, or has it been incomplete? And I'll tell you, they will never last. They will never last. And what Jesus says here is what you worship matters. And when you worship me and you put your faith in me, you will find true completeness. Why? Because I have gone and died for you. I have loved you. I have died for you. I've given you my very life so that you can have a deep, complete relationship with the Father in heaven. And so you can have a true relationship with your Father in heaven. We never think we're good enough to meet with God. I actually think a lot of people feel very ashamed to go to God. Even Christians always go, man, I don't think today I did something bad. I don't think I should meet with God. I've even had conversations with brothers and sisters where they felt shame. They couldn't even approach fellowship or community. And the thing is, in Christ, you've been given a bond, a relationship with God. It's much more rich than anything this world has to offer. Everything this world offers, it can come, it can go. You're kind of based on movement, right, and need and supply. But with God, it's infinitely deep and rich and fulfilling. And in this story, I feel like the calling for us is to respond like the woman at the well. Only when you become transformed do you become a vehicle where God can use to change the world? Like here after this text, she becomes fully accomplished to go out. And she basically, later on in the text, it says, they say, we came to hear Jesus because of you, but now we believe because of what he said. She becomes this missionary that's crazy effective. And it's just an incredible story of the woman of the well. And hopefully me sharing with you, I'm covering a lot of ground. There's a lot more deep stuff you can go into it, but I wanted to cover it because it's one of my favorite stories. And I think I want to challenge you guys to know Jesus. If there's people here that haven't been growing in their relationship with God or have been coming but have never asked these questions, please come talk to one of the brothers and sisters here. We would love to pray with you.